Today, you guys are in for a treat. My interview with a friend of mine who is a school counselor, Andrew Smith. So, listen in, share this episode with others who will learn from it as well, and hit that subscribe button. Welcome to Behavior Strategies for Class. I am Diane Bachman, your behavior paraprofessional, with over 15 years of experience working in special education. And I'm so glad you're here because I'll be teaching you about social-emotional learning, behavior strategies, trauma-informed care, and more. So if you are tired of being frustrated and not knowing what to do with your students who have challenging and disruptive behavior, you're in the right place. Now, if you're ready to become more equipped to help your students learn and grow, let's listen in to today's episode. All right, guys, welcome back to Behavior Strategies for Class. Today, I have an interview with a friend of mine, Andrew, who is a school counselor. So before I mess up all your time, I will turn it over to you, Andrew, to introduce yourself.
Hi, I'm Andrew. I'm a school counselor. I've been about 7 years now that I've been licensed as a school counselor. I'm also a private license. So I was like, hey, let's get a little bit more training. So I went and got my private license too. Shout out to my supervisor, Liz, for the amazing feedback she gave me, as well as my mentor, Carrie. I could probably insert some random, 80s lyric and she'd probably get it, but I can't think of anything right now.
She would love that.
But let's see. So I'm in the Midwest. I'm in the Omaha region. I've been here about 3 years now. I did about 4 years as my first 4 years as a licensed counselor in Monument, Colorado. And then let's see. Jeez, I've about 6 or 7 years between Colorado Springs and a little place in Washington, working in the school districts. And then a couple years, it kind of feels that way, doing ABA therapy with some kiddos.
Wow, cool.
Just been kind of all over the place is what it feels like.
Yeah. No, I just wanted to clarify, you're mostly have been in elementary school?
Actually, pretty much all of it. For my licensing, I had to do a couple different levels. And so middle school was one that I thought was pretty fun. And I enjoyed it. 6th to 8th graders, you got some 6th graders who are still kind of little kids. And then you have 8th graders who are probably way too old for their age. But it was a good fit. So I spent about a year and a half doing that for my intern hours and things like that at Falcon, Colorado, kind of one of the districts over there. So a few different levels.
So what would be your favorite level that you like working with?
I have to say just kind of that older, that intermediate, sometimes that middle school area, just because the conversations tend to be a little bit more rich. You can have that.
Right.
Kind of have that higher level, but yet you can still be a kid with them and connect with them that way, which is kind of fun, being a nerd, science geek nerd myself. So
that's awesome. Right now in the schools, what is your main job that you're doing at the schools right now?
So I'm full-time school counselor. That's the main gig. And then as with everybody who works in education knows, there's always some sort of side thing or just additional duties as assigned. Am I right? I do quite a few different things. I'm on the district crisis team for our district. So if there's any response that's needed for any sort of deaths, sometimes that includes student deaths or student injuries, different situations like that where you would need more mental health support, I'm on one of the teams. We have two, so I'm on one of the teams that responds. I do some mentoring within the district as well, which is a fun thing. Usually I end up getting paired with people who have more experience than I do, so I kind of feel like I'm learning as much as they are or more. But that's another
That's
side
cool,
gig.
though.
It just gives you a little bit more flavor and just a little bit more experience looking through somebody else's lens, which is always, I always appreciate myself. Just some various specialty things that we have for our district with training and coaching and different things like that as well. Committees galore. I mean, you name it. We've done some curriculum stuff, done some things to look at our suicide rating scales and reactionary things for at the district level. I'm on it. I went to the first one about some parent resources. So just various things like that. This district I'm in really believes in kind of continuous progress, and updating, and we've got a really great mental health coordinator. So she really spurs it on, which is makes it easy to volunteer for some different things. But many hats within the school day. There's obviously lunch coverage and duty that way. I'm on the specials rotation, so the scheduling for that is kind of already taken care of. So I just rotate with
Oh,
my
nice.
kiddos. And it works out pretty well. It's generally with a lot of school counselors, you're looking at either once every 2 weeks you try and get in there and do your curriculum with some kiddos. And sometimes it's once every month. It really just kind of depends on your setup and your school size and those kinds of things. So that's kind of a few things in a nutshell.
Yeah, a little busy. And oh yeah, you have a family and kids and
Oh wait,
them too.
that's right. It's hard to turn that off sometimes to then come home. So, but I've got two great kids, a 10-year-old and a 7-year-old, and they're giving us some challenges, but it's always fun. They're very good, caring kids, and that's the biggest thing that my wife and I always talked about is just we want to raise good people. There's plenty of time to learn math and science and reading and to really excel at it. There's not always that time to learn to be a good person. So.
True. So definitely character building. I do see more of that throughout the classes at school. So that's a huge,
Yeah.
huge difference that I've been seeing, which is really good.
That's right.
So how do you feel like students are doing? So an overall picture of students' mental health nowadays, how do you feel they are doing?
It's kind of a loaded question. And to take the forest look at everything, I think
Uh-huh.
that people are okay, or they're fine in
Yeah.
some. And there's all sorts of different acronyms, but when we start digging deeper, there's just a lot more that starts surfacing on some things. And
Right.
so much is related just to the pandemic and COVID that when we start looking in and zeroing in on some different things, we start seeing a lot of undercurrents of anxiety and lack of coping or resiliency. I mean, we just went through this huge
That's
thing,
huge.
and
Yeah.
just so much of it was overwhelming for us as adults, let alone for all these mini humans who are looking to us for modeling and different things like that. And so we see some of those things where it's a lack of coping or what I've been talking with my fourth, fifth, and sixth graders, even my older kiddos at my elementary school, is that you may have 30 things, but do you know when to use them and when's appropriate time to use them? And different things like that. Like they might be able to say, yeah, I could take a walk, I could breathe. Like, well, that may not be what you need at the moment. So just various things like that of trying to use the coping skills correctly for what you need and whatnot. There's a lot of stress too that we notice, not just from the kids, but from the adults in the room, the parents. So much stress that can just really derail a lot of different things, or it really just adds a really complicating factor to stuff. Whether it's the school day, it's concentration, financial stress, your relationship stress. I mean, there's so much that it just touches, especially with the brain and just the imitation that can happen and the influence that you have from everybody else. We all know that behavior affects others around you, since we're nobody's an island unto themselves, and so my
Right.
stress can influence your stress, and we start seeing that quite a bit from our younger ones too.
Yeah, it's hard because definitely everything gets overwhelming. And then, like you said, now you're sitting in class and you're expected to do all of these academics, and their minds are just blown on whatever else is happening, and divorce and sickness and all kinds of things. So, do you have like an open door policy that students can come and see you whenever they need to talk to you? Do you feel like you are getting even more students wanting to talk to you more?
Absolutely. I mean, all of that. So, Harry, my mentor, it really kind of taught me about keeping that open door and that inviting presence. And so that's something I've tried to carry over as much as possible. And keeping that humor that I like to bring with a lot of different things. Sometimes they're bad dad jokes, but just creating that welcoming environment, the connection or the connectability opens that door. And so I do have the open door policy, and at the beginning of the year, I give kids my email. I give kids the ability to reach out that way. I have notes that they could put into a small mailbox I have at my front, right by my door. And I keep my door open all the time, unless I'm on a, pretty serious phone call or just not even there sometimes, right? But the biggest thing is that we do have a lot of kids who are want to come in and seek out things. My school, what I've noticed a lot lately in the last like year or two is the lunchtime kids want to be away from the loud stress part and just bring three or four friends with them to be able to have a chance to connect with their friends without all of the different stimulation. And we, whether intentional or not, I know several kids are very intentional that it's because of the just everything that's going on, but kids are reaching out. In the ways that they know how, and sometimes it's not in the best ways. So we see connection seeking and attention seeking things, all the time, just from disruptive behavior. Really, I had a kiddo I worked with for about 2 hours the other day, and when I really made progress with him during the day was right after we sat and ate lunch together. And he was just, it was almost like a light switch turned, and we chatted about nothing about the assignment that he was up there for not doing. And when I turned that back over after, taking his tray back, he sat down, did about half of it in about 5 minutes. So it really wasn't about, there's this great YouTube clip. It's not about the nail. It's a funny short if anybody wants to look that one up. It really wasn't about the nail that was the problem. It was about the process and about the connection and
What is
relationships.
it?
It's not about the nail. And it's just a short, maybe not even 5 minutes. But that's one of the biggest
Oh,
things.
I think I've seen it. Isn't there like a nail in her forehead or something?
And it
Is
snags
that
on
the
a
one?
sweater. It's a kind of an exercise in listening. And the guy's like, but if you just pull it, but really it's the process of connecting through it. Like everybody knows that if the nail wasn't there, you would have better conditioned sweaters. You wouldn't have the headache. It wouldn't feel like it's just pounding up in your head. But we all know the answers to a lot of these things of like, if the kid just had breakfast, well, yeah, that'd be great. It'd be great if they all showed up ready. If they had their pencils, they had their paper, backpacks, snack. We all know that that would be the best thing in the world. But what we're getting is what kids and families can do. And some of them can do better, and we work with them to try and do better. But they're showing up with what they've got, and that's where we got to meet them with, and that's one of the biggest parts. So keeping that open door policy is that it just lets that connection seeking help, in my experience. And my teachers know that, if it's not a good time, then they'll email me. and just say, hey, Billy Bob Sue, or little Susie wants to needs to check in, let me know if you're around, or come grab them between blah blah blah. And I work with the kids too. Like, if you're in the middle of a test, we're going to try and want you to finish a test unless it's an emergency. We will get you a break. Don't worry. It may be.
Avoidance? What?
Seriously, like, it's why isn't it stat? This math has just got me. And there's a few that we've really had to stick to that. But that doesn't work if I don't have a supportive staff, if there's not supportive people around me. So that's I've been lucky
True.
that they're understanding about that, which is nice, that they know that, this kiddo is coming from a hard time and a hard background, and maybe today it isn't, math's not going to happen, but we always have math's always there. We always have another chance at that. We don't always have necessarily the time to make that connection, and so that's one of the biggest things, because it fuels empathy. Connection gives you, it feeds the information that you know about the kid, which increases our respect, which fuels empathy. There's a wonderful program that we had in Monument that was started by a couple of counselors, and I don't think it exists anymore. Just from, this was a little while ago, but it was all about empathy and about connecting, and just the more you know about someone, the more likely you are to at least give them respect. And when you respect somebody, you can at least offer some of the empathy. And so just drives connection, and just trying to do all those little things to make it as easy as possible for kids and people to connect is one of my biggest goals, at least.
Yeah, for sure. And I really like what you said, to really meet students where they are. I think we forget that because, students come, get your stuff, you got to get to class, we're just ready to move on with our day and go on, and they're like laying out in the middle of the hallway and you're like, dude, what's going on? And it is true. Sometimes it's the total basics, well, I'm still hungry. All right, buddy, we can give you a snack. That's, something we can help you with. Or it's, I think I've been learning to just say, so what do you need? What do you really need right now? And honestly, some of them are like, I don't even know. They don't know, and how to articulate that. And then sometimes it's just giving them that minute and they'll be like, you know what? I need another minute, just to sit here. Or can I finish my juice? Or can I, whatever it is, and just letting them chill. I think it's still our environment too, and our lives, and we have so much to do, and you're at school, let's go, we need to keep going. But just being able to take that minute and, like you said, connect with them where they are. And that takes like 2 seconds. I've talked about Dr. Bruce Perry, and I'm sure you know who he is as well. And he talks about connections with the students, it happens in minutes.
Oh, yeah.
It's taking that minute. How are you today?
It's so
Or
true.
just what do you need? It's not a huge drawn out thing that I think sometimes teachers think I don't have time for that. And they just keep moving on, and the kids are left over here like, what the heck,
Or
And so, yeah, go ahead.
no, what? you're spurring me on. Preaching to me. I mean, because that I totally am with you on that one. And there are some people saying that because of the pandemic, their kids are a year or two behind socially, developmentally, because of everything. We don't form those same connections, and that's some of the research that Bruce Perry is coming out with, or at least some other trauma researchers are, that the connections formed just aren't at the same rate as they were when we're all virtual, because of just the interaction. And I love his talk about just everything.
He's great.
His emphasis on mirror neurons and how their only job is to then reflect the behavior around us. It seems so just it just light bulb moments for us, or at least for me, that we have this all around us. If we've ever gone into or had somebody come into a room, and then just all of the energy is sucked out, right? Those lack of a better word, those energy vampires or emotional vampires, right? But also, we've had somebody who just lightens us up and just brightens the whole room and those different things. So we experience this and we don't realize it. I always like to do the yawn test with staff or kids, because as soon as one person yawns, then it is just it travels, right? I mean, catch it like lightning. But it just shows us how, I mean, you walk in a room for 5 minutes and you can yawn and just affect somebody. So we know it, but then there's realizing it. And I think that's one of the biggest parts for that. And there's always time, or if you don't take the time, then you're gonna have the time later on because of the behavior. Do you invest 5 minutes to gain the 15 minutes back later, maybe, or the 20 that it turns into? It's hard because you don't know if that would be that day that you have that you do spend 15, 20 minutes on a behavior or disruption in the classroom. But what does the 5 minutes cost you, or what will you return from that 5 minutes? That's one of the biggest things.
That is the truth. I mean, we have a teacher, and a couple of our students are in there, and he'll want to come out for a break, and we can tell even after his 5 minutes, like he's still like amped, and he's kind of a hot mess. And our teacher's like hauling, like, where is he? Why isn't he here? Like, we have this. Da, da, da. And we're like, so do you want him to come back ready to learn and ready to work? Or do you want him to come back in and be irritated, frustrated, and maybe explosive at you? It's so giving kids that time. And like I said, we're so busy. Like, we gotta get this done. We gotta get the test. We gotta do this. I get that. But if your student is not ready and in that mindset as much as possible, because obviously not all the students are going to be 100%, in that mindset. And it just reminds me, like, we had this training about a month ago, and it was all day. And like half of the room, probably like 2 hours in, we're all like standing up. We're like, can we have a break? We're like, bathroom break. Like, where's the snacks? Like, we're thirsty. And we were like, oh my God, this is what we do to our students. And we're like, no, sit down. Like, stop moving. Stop talking. Stop. We can't even do it as adults. It's like everybody needs to like chill, like take a minute and really connect with your students where they are. And again, it's even like a brain. A brain break, or even a movement break. Get up, let them move, let them come right back. I think teachers sometimes, even though they're overwhelmed, they feel an even more overwhelm of, now I got to teach them social skills. Now I got to, connect with them emotionally. And now it's even more. Do you find that there as well, that teachers feel that extra pressure? Now I have to connect. Now I have to teach social skills, that type of thing.
Absolutely. It becomes a lot. I mean, the teachers, the social workers, sometimes the counselors, sometimes the mom, sometimes the disciplinarian, sometimes the teacher. There's so many hats that they have to fill for 25 kiddos, especially at the elementary level. One of the biggest things that I think helps us, but is also a stress, is our teachers are the one that deliver another SEL curriculum. So social emotional learning curriculum. But I think one of the biggest parts is that it, or the best parts that I see, are the opening and closing circles that they choose to do, where it really is just you're taking the first 15 minutes of class, and what happened, how are you feeling? And they obviously have different videos they go through, different talking points and different themes for. But the biggest part is that it creates that connection, that ability to speak out, and for the whole class to validate the other kids. And so, here you have 15 minutes that puts a little bit more stress, because you're teaching something that, teacher prep programs sometimes don't have as much training in psychology or social skills or sociology and things like that. I mean, you get a fair amount, but just it doesn't ever feel like it's enough, right? And, being that you're wanting to go into teaching. But the investment in that, like I said, can save so many and enrich so many. It creates the ability for a kid to speak about some hard challenges. It gives a chance for you to model acceptance and validation and empathy and sympathy and show them the difference between those two. And, in a very Brené Brown, way of like being able to just sit there and join them in it and, and then be able to move on and just demonstrate that, yes, that's hard. You can do hard things. Guess what? We're all going to travel together, right? Where you got us here.
Yes.
And, little Jimmy knows exactly what you know. He's had the same experience, but Susie, yeah, she doesn't quite know, but she's going to be there to give you a pencil and a high five on the way out anyway, no matter if she feels she knows what you're going through or not. And so that classroom culture just brings so much to it. And that's one of the things that, like I said, I think it's another stress, but it's also a benefit too. But we're definitely feeling that crunch for absenteeism to improve our attendance rates. And now it's okay, well, let's gain back those things that we lost from COVID. It's those test scores need to go back up, and we're getting right back in back to business kind of a deal. And that, it needs to happen, but it's also we have some time, and that's the hardest part. This didn't happen in a day, so to expect that we're going to go back to it in a day or 6 months is not going to be as easy. And I always go back to think about just the effects of like Hurricane Katrina, which a lot of the research has been coming out about, and that a lot of kids, they were out for a half year or a year as the wards were
Oh,
flooded
wow.
and were damaged. And a lot of them started their trends started going back up as far as test scores and things like that go, through a lot of intentional things. And there are some controversial things as far as like school organizations and things like that, but a lot of kids made back the progress. And so that's one of the biggest things is that, for a lot of 80% of our kids, we're gonna get them back on track. And for the other 20 is where we're gonna give them the supports that we can, as much as we can. And that's one of the biggest things is that we have some time. It feels like we don't have time, but we do have some time to stop and connect and breathe with them and to model that, because
Yeah.
that's the biggest thing, to model that connection, especially at our younger age, being an elementary one.
Yeah.
It's so key to their overall growth. Just lays that
Exactly.
foundation for it. Yeah.
I mean, those are the best, some of the best teachers, sitting down with them on the carpet, getting in there with them and laughing. I mean, it's so great to see teachers like laughing and joking as much as you can because little ones, they're like, what? They don't always get your jokes, but I want to go back to like I used to have or used to see teachers do like a morning meeting and then an afternoon meeting. And I was in this one class and it was a second grade class and it came up to this little girl's turn and she got up to share one of those stuffed animals that she had. And she's like, this is from my baby sister who, died, I want to say like within a week. And everyone's just like, oh my word. But obviously she felt safe and valued enough to be able to share that. And those are huge connections, and it's not to say that you have to sit there and have therapy with her. She's just sharing. And it's again, like you said, just showing that empathy, because I'm sure a lot of kids have never had a sibling die, And so that's the power, I think, of having those morning meetings or those times just to get together. I mean, like I even say now, like right before Thanksgiving, do you know what your students are doing? Where are they going? Who are they going to be with?
Yeah.
So connection, I believe, is huge, a huge factor to having students be successful. And that's successful everywhere. Like you said, emotionally, socially, academically, all of the above is starting with that connection. What are
We
your
know that,
thoughts?
well, we know that when kids are and people are safe, they feel safe.
Yeah.
Their brain is in a state to receive information. I mean, we know that from so many different areas, to biological, physical, I mean, psychological, psychiatric studies, all of those different things that if a person feels safe, they're going to be willing to fail and willing to
Yeah.
work through hard things. They're going to be willing to succeed too. I've worked with so many different kids that they were scared of success because success brought more and higher expectations, and that brought more attention and different things like that. I've worked with kids that, they felt so safe that they could share about a sibling death, and they knew that they would be valued and that they would be loved and cared for there because, hey, they had a community, they had a tribe, and that's one of the biggest things that you can't undervalue it. That it's just powerful. I mean, there's just not any other word for it. I think the hardest part is that people seem it could be overwhelming to think that I'm responsible for that connection. But in my mind, what I tell people is that they're seeking the connection. You're just creating the window or the door for them to walk through with that. You're creating that safe spot, and whether they're willing to or not, they're going to. They're going to walk through in certain ways. And then the hardest part is that you don't, like you said, you don't have to go into therapy for that. You could look at all the techniques in the world, and one of the biggest predictors of success, in therapy even, is just, do you feel safe and comfortable with the person that you're working with? Hands down, the biggest statistic in therapy, if it's going to be successful, if you're going to be successful, is can you connect with the other person? And that's so if that's true for us as adults, why isn't it true for our little mini humans who are 7, 8, 9, 12, or 14-year-olds too, right? If you feel safe connecting, then you're going to do and be willing to do hard things. That doesn't mean that there's not consequences. That doesn't mean that there's not still accountability, but that can be addressed within the relationship. And then you have the investment to pull on too. When things need to get a little bit harder, there is some stress that people need to go through, but stress isn't always bad. Too much stress or toxic stress can be bad, but you need stress to grow, and you need those hard things to be able to grow through, not avoid. And so that's one of the biggest parts on the other end of that too, of being able to use that investment then to help those kids grow and to work through those behaviors, those hard times. And sometimes math, I always pick on math because I wasn't great at it, still working on it. But when you need to do that hard math, okay, hey, Johnny, this is hard. I'm going to help you with two of them. You're going to do six, though. You don't have to do all the 20 because I don't need 20 to see what you know. But let's tackle six, right? I'll start with two. You do those other ones. And just the fact that we did those together sometimes is enough to spur and keep that momentum for other kids, because the bottom line is that they do have to work through hard things, and sometimes life is hard. But if you have the connection, if you have the investment, it can be hard together, which is sounds always so much better than just being alone.
Yeah, for sure. And I think I see those lack of coping skills more so still in our kinders and our first graders. Like they have no clue how to deal with, no, not right now, or you need to wait, or no, you have to go here, or no, we're doing, like they're just like, what? And obviously they're the ones that were like babies in COVID, and they've been doing whatever they want to do for so long. And now they're in school and we're like, nope. And of course they're having all these behaviors because they're like, I'm out. I don't want to do this. They're like running out the school and running down the halls and,
Because
doing
they have to do some
whatever.
hard
And we're just
things,
like,
right?
yeah, sorry. We're back in school, buddy. Right here.
Yeah, and I'm very fortunate. I've been lucky to work with some really great kindergarten teachers. And I think if you can do kindergarten, you could do anything. I don't care how hard high school
Truth.
teaching is. I mean, you think about 20 to 25 little 5 or 6 year
Oh,
olds
my
with
word.
motors that
Yeah.
don't stop, no nap time anymore, and just
Exactly.
as much recess as you can, just keeps them going. That's
For
that you're a hero in my book. But so much of that is, yeah,
sure.
now we have some structure, and families were, for they were trying to just get by and survive. I mean,
Survive, yeah.
so many of us in other situations were doing the same thing. And so, online teaching was one thing. It was a weird thing. And I keep telling my wife, and we have this discussion. She's a librarian, so she has a really good understanding of history and implications and everything, because she's a lot smarter than me. And we just talk about, Spanish flu was the last time something like this happened. Like, not even with polio
Wow.
did we shut down schools. In polio, they kept the schools open to try and deliver the vaccine and everything, but they shut everything down. Spanish flu, we're talking 1912. I mean, almost literally
Wow.
100 years or so. So it's a one in a lifetime kind of thing. And it's just
Yeah.
so crazy that, now we're, depending on who you ask, if we're a year behind it, but we're coming out of the other side of it in a lot of different ways that, where do we go from here? But we have all these littles that their family was doing their best. Their parents were doing their best. They were, it was stressful. And so putting a little bit of boundaries on kiddos at home in a school sense wasn't necessarily an option sometimes, because it wasn't school, it was home. And it was, so now that we have those things and trying to get used to some, I use the word institutionalized behaviors, but just some group behaviors and some more formal behaviors doesn't feel right. And so that's where a lot of the, I always talk about modeling, and just a lot of repetition and
Yep.
continuity is so key at that age. And it really does for a lot of us. When we get back into our routine, we always talk about, like, well, it's good to had a great vacation, it's good to be back in our routine though, right? And that's what a lot of times helps with our kindies too, but they just need so much more of that front loading and that front teaching that, and
Yeah.
model too, to use to do it appropriately. And you walk on this side of the hallway and not on the other, because you're going to run into somebody like you just did. Okay, let's get back up. Let's try that again. Those different opportunities too. So that's just another key thing about just the continuity and keeping the expectations high and approachable for a lot of our kids is a big thing. Big thing that we constantly are talking about. It's not, there's never a right answer, but there's some wrong ways to go about it, is how I always say. There's many right answers, but I think I said that the wrong way.
Yeah.
There's several right answers, but there's definitely more wrong answers about how you can teach some of those kids to model with those different interventions and different things.
Yeah. Because definitely having those clear expectations, I believe, helps to cut down on their frustration, their confusion on really what they need to be doing. Or where they need to be. And so when they can hone in on what's kind of expected, even though there's going to be some push and shove, I'm sure at times, it's still there. That's just like our admin was talking about, because it's coming up, with breaks, we have a week off next week, and sometimes, students have a hard time with that because we just don't know, whatever trauma or family or no family around or whatever is going on, sometimes that does, throw off behaviors. So, we're gonna wrap up here. So what would be, and I'm sure you have 5 million ideas, but what would be one good, I guess, strategy maybe, or one way that teachers can really help students with their social emotional learning.
Yeah. Oh man, now I'm going blank because I'm trying to boil it down.
I
I
know, there's a
always,
lot.
yeah, I always just highlight, learn what their story is. Take some
Yeah.
time at this. I think I've shared in the past with friends and other people that waiting, and it's sometimes it's just the practicality of it, of taking some time to go through every one, but maybe just once a week, find out what the story is, find out what they're working with, and find out what they like. Just a little interview, and they get to interview you back, and so it just demonstrates that listening, that connecting. There's always going to be time to assign consequences. There's always going to be time to assign rewards. But if you invest from them from the beginning, then though it makes those parts so much easier and so much richer, because then you can make some logical consequences. You can make some appropriate rewards that they're going to love and be invested in and want to work through. And at the same time, you pair yourself with those things so that they have that stronger connection with you, and you can become that reward for them in the long run. And that's, that move from that extrinsic to that intrinsic is always a beautiful thing to see. And sometimes it's not always fostered by us, or it's not always intentional. So just the intentional part of finding out the story and what they like, don't like, and what their story is from the back of the pages all the way to the beginning, I guess, is the best way to put
Yeah.
it.
Yeah, I think that's great. And I just want to say thank you so much for taking the time out to speak to us today. And all of your awesome wisdom is truly appreciated. So thanks again, Andrew, for being here. And, hey, maybe we will have you back and you could do like monthly or, whatever works.
Would love to be back. It's
But
always great to talk with you, and I appreciate it. Thank you.
thanks. Hopefully, you enjoyed today's episode with Andrew Smith and all of his awesome insight from being a school counselor and all the other amazing hats that he wears for the community and for the school. And I just want to remind you again that you can contact me, message me for a free coaching session. If you're interested in being a guest on the podcast, I would love to connect with you for that as well. Don't forget, hit that subscribe button, share this episode, and I will see you next week. Thanks so much for listening. I truly appreciate your support. And if I have encouraged you, motivated you to continue to learn, to support your students, even better, to help them strive in your classroom, please leave a review, hit that subscribe button so that others can see they can learn and grow here as well. Thank you.